Good morning. Major Nadal Malik Hassan is charged with the murders of 13 people at Fort Hood on November 5th. He had his first court hearing from his hospital room last Saturday. We're joined now by Hassan's defense attorney, retired Army Colonel John Galligan. Good morning.
Good morning.
I wanted to start with the question that must be on a lot of people's minds, and you must have been asked it before. You're part of this same Central Texas military community that Major Hassan is part of, the same community that was devastated by this attacks on the 5th of November. These are people that are still in the process of grieving, your friends and colleagues, and I'm sure you are still in the process of grieving. So why did you take this job?
Well, after 30 years in the U.S. Army, when I retired, I continued to have as a large part of my criminal practice, defense practice, representation of soldiers. I've continued that to this day, and every time I have a soldier walk into my office, I take great pride in being able to represent them in a court hearing. And many have been exonerated.
What's been the response, though, from people at Fort Hood? There must be mixed reactions to the people that you see on the streets.
It's been mixed. From many of my formerly fellow JAG officers, they're glad to see that I'm on the case. They know that I understand the military justice system, that I want to see it work. And as defense attorneys themselves, they think that's the uppermost objective of any criminal defense lawyer, make sure the system works properly.
So let's talk about the military justice system here for just a second.
Right.
The first question is are you going to change? You're going to file a motion for change of venue? I know that you had mentioned that he may not be able to get a fair trial there, but there's also precedent in the military justice system that pretrial publicity, even widespread publicity, is not necessarily sufficient reason for a change of venue.
Well, I think we have some very unique circumstances in this case. I'm not aware of any case where we've had someone as many senior military officials present in a pretrial setting as we've had here at Fort Hood, to include the commander-in-chief himself. Anyone that reads the remarks of President Barack Obama on the date of the morning would have to ask themselves, was it really just a eulogy, or was it more in the nature of a sentencing argument? I'm very fearful that he cannot get a fair trial here at Fort Hood, and increasingly I'm wondering, at what installation could he get a fair trial? But it'll be a paramount issue in the case.
You're going to have him examined by mental health experts, correct?
That's correct.
Is that in preparation for an insanity plea?
Well, I mean, I think it's necessary in any criminal case where there's serious doubts as to the mental responsibility of the defendant. I'll say this, the magistrate who reviewed the pretrial confinement hearing a week ago, in his written report back to the counsel, that's the prosecutor and myself, indicated that the mental status of the defendant was questionable, in his words. So that, together with statements of other doctors from Walter Reed who described him as paranoid, there's a reasonable basis for concluding conducting a mental responsibility exam, and we'll ask that that be done.
Well, let's stipulate for the moment that there is a question of insanity here, and you evoke the evidence that would probably be available from his colleagues at Walter Reed, who are on the record sort of giving an opinion, not in court, of course. They are just sort of evaluating the things that they observed in a very different setting. But I'm just wondering, is it fair to say that a conviction here constitutes an affront to him getting a fair trial? I mean, the idea that people at Fort Hood would want some sort of punishment for this act doesn't necessarily preclude the possibility that the trial is unfair, right?
Well, that's right. I mean, look, the problem that you have is that the jury pool, which would ultimately judge Major Hassan in a court-martial, is drawn from that very community that we've just talked about. This trial, I think, would at bare minimum have to be transferred to another location in order to try and mitigate against, the national publicity that's been given to it. And there are a lot of things that can be done. I mean, that's why we have voir dire. That's why we have other procedures in place. But certainly, I'm not aware of any case that has received this amount of publicity, nationally, internationally, all of which operate against giving him the fair trial that he deserves and is entitled to under the Constitution.
We can only assume at this point that the prosecution is going to ask for the death penalty. That's
correct.
Every indication says that. We've had 47 military cases since 1984 that were where the death penalty was sought. 15 convictions, that's about a 32% prosecution success rate. None of those people have been actually executed when it came right down to it, and the president would have to sign an affirmative order that explicitly approved the execution were he to receive the death penalty.
That's correct. I mean, my own experience, in fact, the Matthews case, which was tried in Germany and which was one of the individuals that's given rise to a lot of the death penalty debate, I was a captain in the JAG Corps when that case was tried at my location in Germany. People ask me, what do you think about the death penalty? I think it's premature to ask me about the death penalty in this particular case because we haven't even had the Article 32. Of more interest to me is what is the President of the United States going to do in the current death penalty case that's on his desk and ready for action. That's the Loving case, which, oddly enough, is a case that also arose right here at Fort Hood.
It sounds like you might be interested in moving that the fact that the president came and commiserated with the people of Fort Hood prejudices the case because the president would be ruling on this.
Well, that's correct. I mean,
wow.
You know, one of the big issues in any military justice setting is unlawful command influence. Let's not forget that the president was here not just as a president, but he was also here in his role as a commander-in-chief. And it's that aspect of his presence that gives me great pause. In addition to that, he was right there on the die and communicating in private with the convening authority, General Cone, who also plays a very, very important role in the pretrial setting of any military justice case at Fort Hood. It's to General Cone that I have to go and ask for my experts, money, my investigator, my security clearance. I have to be concerned when I know that already there's been that existing relationship and communication with the president himself.
I would imagine that as a lawyer, you and the attorney for Khalid Sheikh Mohammed have probably two of the hardest jobs in the country right now. Any regrets?
No. To me, this is going to be the true test to determine if, in fact, the military justice system can ensure that every accused gets his fair day in court and is assured due process in all of the procedures that lead up to a court-martial. If we don't do it right in this case, we might as well give up and say that we're not going to be able to ensure a fair trial in other cases. Everybody in the system is under the looking glass. I ensure to do my proper role as a defense counsel. I'm just asking that all of the other participants in the trial process do the same. And thus far, I'm a bit concerned. I'm concerned about what happened last Saturday when we had the pretrial confinement hearing. I'm concerned that the commander-in-chief made a presence here at Fort Hood. Mm-hmm. And
okay.
I'm still hoping for the best.
Well, we'll check back in with you again. Retired Army Colonel John Galligan is the defense attorney for Major Nadal Malik Hassan.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.